Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 5, season 17. Happy Hump podcast for season 17. We're smack bang in the middle, and I thought it was a really good time, rather than have some wonderful guests that we have had on the first four episodes, it has to be said. Hopefully we're going to have a cracking one as well next week. The plan this week was to get all the boys around the table, metaphorically speaking. So that is Jack, Trev and Ryan. We're getting a bit of a complex now about Jack, because 5 minutes prior to starting to record this, Jack messages to say that he can't be with us. He might be with us later on, but he's being called into something important. So it's just Trevor Agnew. Hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, Tony Simpson. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Slightly disappointed that we haven't got Jack banging, but, you know, I'm starting to have to find a way of living with it now. And Ryan Champion, hello.
Hello, Tony and Trevor, and not Jack.
No, I know.
Hello, Jack, if you're listening to us from wherever you are.
Yeah, wherever you're sat, whether you're commuting on your way into that high-powered meeting in London or whatever it may be, going for drinks with
Carlos, Lando, whoever it is this week,
whatever F1 driver you're smoozing this week.
Yeah, I did watch his video with Max Verstappen, and I have to say it was quite good if anybody hasn't seen that.
No, search it out. Right, boys.
Because we like him, really, more or less, most of the time.
We do like him. You know, I remember when he was, you know, before he started doing those videos and he was with us, right, doing podcasts, you know, to the masses.
Did we make him famous, do you think?
He's talking about Max Verstappen now, yeah?
We were talking about Jackie Boy Benyon, of course, who you then worked with on Circuit of Ireland, Trev. So I think some of us, I think we can all claim a little bit of Jack's success.
We'll find out whether he listens or not now, won't we? We're not sure he does listen.
Yeah, let's find out whether he actually does. So let's say a safe word for Jack. Jack, if you do listen, when you listen to this bit, right, I want you to send a message to our group. What should the word be?
Bunker. Yeah, because that's where he is. Clearly, he's in a bunker somewhere. Some secret meeting.
Okay, we'll go with bunker.
Your accent makes that sound different, Trev.
Yeah. That's why, I'll be honest with you, right? That's why I went for clarification.
Yeah.
Do you want to, before we get into Finland, boys, and I want to talk about the winners and losers in Finland, and I don't just necessarily mean Oitanak. I want to talk about across the board. Do you want some Gary Boyd facts? Should we break into the podcast? Yeah. Right. Where are we? What separates these two groups? Group A, there's nine names. Padden, Osberg, Loeb, Sordo, Sunninen, Mikkelsen, Tanak, Lappi, and Latvala. Group B, Ogier, Nouvelle, Evans, Meek, Greensmith, and Breen. Any idea what separates?
I think the first group have been apart by 1/10 of a second on winning stages. The second group haven't.
Ryan, are you happy to share Trevor's thoughts, or are you going to have some of your own?
Yes, because I haven't got a clue.
Okay, incorrect. Answer A, Group A drivers have had a podium within their last two starts in WRC car in a WRC event. Group B drivers have not had a podium in their last two starts. Really does feel odd that two of the dominant of the three drivers in the second group are without a podium in their last two WRC starts. There you go. That's a Gary Boyd facts for you. I'm sure you'll share that a little bit later on in text form. Maybe it might be easier to get your head around if in text form as opposed to me reading it out with my accent. Could have been worse. Could have been Trev's accent, as we mentioned before. Right, let's get straight into Rally Finland, boys, before we forget what happened. Now, Oitanak is a given. He's won the event. We do know that. But I'm going to get your take first and foremost, Ryan Champion. Who would you say the others winners are from Rally Finland? Who would you say has had their stock raised?
There's a couple in there, isn't there? I think Craig Breen, straight away.
That's the obvious one.
Straight up there, because he did a fantastic job. And to be honest, I think he did everything and more than anybody could have expected, and ended up doing a fabulous job for the team as well. Andreas Mikkelsen put in a great performance, and the pair of them outpaced Thierry Neuville in the same car. And, you know, Thierry was scratching his head for the whole weekend, and he's the, you know, he's the man fighting for the championship for Hyundai. So I think both guys to outpace Thierry in Finland did a very good job. And, you know, you have to say credit to Mikkelsen. He looked on it all weekend and brought home a good result as well. The other one, clearly, Esa-Pekka Lappi. You know, Lappi's had an awful season. It's been very, very difficult for him, and he just looked a different driver once again. He never put a foot wrong. He made that car look competitive. And again, you know, it references his multiple world champion teammate Sebastian Ogier, who just couldn't quite make the car work in the same way. And Lappi could. Yes, it's his home rally, but I'd imagine Ogier has done it a significant more times than Lappi has. So, you know, great performance from him as well. And the other one, which we'll probably come to in a while, I mean, probably expected, but that brings its pressures as well. Kalle Rovanperä blew everybody away, and he had a lot of pressure on his shoulders before that rally.
Trev, is Ryan absolutely nailed it there, or have you got your own winners and losers from Finland?
No, I think he's got most of them there. There's a couple more. I'd like to mention Ogier on Saturday after like having been ill all night and not sleeping really. His performance there, I thought, was definitely noteworthy, considering the state he was in the morning anyway. Jari Mäkinen, I think, drove well, apart from the one issue where he ran wide and hit the rock. The rest of the time he seemed quite relaxed and in the flow of everything, so that was good to see. But you can't really criticise anybody. You know, that was the thing that I brought up earlier in the answer to Gary's facts. I noticed that on the Friday in particular, there was something like, I think it was five stages where between first and second, there was one-tenth of a second. And, well, four, like, and one where it was joint fastest. It was just the battle on the Friday, and the intensity of the pace was ridiculous. I've never seen the like of it before. So you can't really criticise too many. I suppose maybe Sunnen and M Sport had a horrible weekend, well, a horrible week. He just was all at sea, and he blamed the splitter on the Friday, which I'll come back to a bit later on in the podcast. But I think, M Sport, you wouldn't expect Gus Greensmith on his first event in Finland in the World Rally Car to be that competitive. He was competitive at times against Sunnen, but they were well off the pace. I think that's most of them covered. As Ryan said, Thierry wasn't on the case that much. He was trying hard enough, but he just didn't seem to be able to make it work.
I always pay attention to what goes on Twitter before we start recording this program. There's been great debate about a few things, which I'm going to talk about a bit later on. But one of our fans from overseas who thinks we're slightly biased with regards to British and Irish drivers, I think it's fair to say, tweeted in, "We'll be very interested to hear your review of British drivers in the next podcast." I wonder what that means. Ryan Champion?
British drivers.
Yeah.
Well, Gus, I think, it was always going to be tough for Gus, wasn't it?
Absolutely. It was a tough ask to begin
jumping
with.
Jumping in to these current cars, a top-line car in Finland, I don't think he did bad. You know, he didn't finish up there in the end, but he wasn't far behind Timo Sunnen for a lot of the early running. And, I think he did pretty much what was expected of him. Chris Meek, on the other hand, I'm not sure where we go with that one. Unfortunate, was he again? You know, again, it's clipping stuff in ditches, isn't it? Maybe just using a little bit more road than some of the others, and it's caught him out again. There was a little bit of debate. It seems that it maybe was the same rock that Jari Mäkinen hit, but Jari Mäkinen knew it was there. There was a video showing that the rock was there on the recce before the rally. Chris maintains that it wasn't, but either way he hit it, and that cost him his rally, and then obviously restarted and then clipped another one running first on the road. So a horrible weekend for him to forget.
Trev, just going back to that, obviously, I did kind of raise that tongue in cheek because people do say we're biased. I genuinely don't think we are. I think we're as subjective as what we can be, all things considered. But obviously, following on from what Ryan's just been saying with regards to Chris's situation, it was well documented on Autosport that Tommy wasn't happy with him or Yari. There was a plan and there was a team plan, and he felt that perhaps both drivers had basically to some degree gone in their own direction. And I'm paraphrasing that ever so slightly from memory of reading the article on Saturday. But what was your take on what happened? Obviously, you've just mentioned Yari, and in some degree, and this is where I'm going to use that word luck, which I know you're not a big fan of, Trev, which is why I wanted to ask you about it. Yari kind of got away with it where Chris didn't.
Yeah, there was that. And I think it was actually the same rock. You know, I got confused when I heard the two different versions of it, when I read Chris's and I heard what Yari Matthew was saying. But I haven't watched the highlights. I get it and understand it. And I think a corner before where the rock actually was, or maybe two corners before, they had one of the red markers in it that we saw this year. I think last year, Yari Matthew was saying that it might have been a concrete marker, which wasn't there on the recce. So that confused me. He was carrying more speed in this time. And it looked to be the same rock. It was off the road on the left-hand side and right-hand bend that they both hit. The question, I think what Tommy was intimating at was, why are they racing out Tannock? You know, at the end of the day, they've got a car that's strong enough for all three of them to be on the podium. And the logic would basically tell you that if they were ahead of Tannock, those positions would be reversed before the end of the rally anyway. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. But where's the line? You know, if you're out and you're having a good feel for the car and everything's feeling great, at what point are you taking chances? Are you not taking chances? If it feels good and you're in the zone, therefore it's effortless, and we saw certainly plenty of people coming at the end of stages like that. But in Chris's case, yeah, it's a familiar pattern. Fastest stage, next stage, runs off the road. We've seen it before. We've talked about it plenty. The pace was just incredible again, first time in Finland. But the question is, should they have been driving at that pace in order to keep the other cars behind? You let Lappy go, and the rest of them, they had those easily under control. So from a team point of view, which is what both those guys should be playing at this point of the season, I think between them, I think that's the first podium that Yari Matthews had. And I think Chris's highest finishes, was it fourth in Argentina? A couple of sixths early on. So to play the team role and support your lead driver, you need to get to the end, and that car was definitely capable of getting to the end of the podium if it didn't have any issues.
Right, from the point of view of moving forward, obviously we're now going into the latter half of the season. You know, Oi Tanak, there's no words really. You know, he controlled the rally, won the power stage, did everything he needed to do. But you know, moving forward, we as we've discussed in the past, you know, teammates can be oh so important for a championship winning driver. You know, we've seen it over the last few years. We talked about it quite a lot with Sebastian Ogier, and obviously what happened while he was at M Sport, and having that good kind of, you know, ironically, Oi Tanak being one of those backup drivers. This must be getting quite stressful now for Tommy as well, because the big thing is for Toyota Gazoo Racing, it's surely going to be the manufacturers, and that's what they need. That's the be all and end all to them. And obviously, the drivers is an added bonus on top, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, obviously, Toyota came out of it with a fantastic team result, as it was. I mean, that's the key thing. As Trev's already said, yes, Yari did clip that rock. Yes, he got a puncture, but ultimately he finished third and drove well all weekend. So, you know, that's really positive news for the team. It wasn't quite a 1-2, but a 1-3 in Finland. You know, I think they'll take that very nicely. So, it was only two cars scoring points. So you know, it was a good team finish, but it nearly fell apart, I guess. Chris, unfortunately, is in this, pressure situation again, really, now, isn't he? Where he needs to start getting some results. It does feel familiar. We have been here before, and he needs to start getting solid results. And Chris isn't a driver that, as we know, he's particularly comfortable going for just solid results. He likes to be driving at the front. He likes to be on the pace. He likes to be setting fastest times. And it was a, you know, great performance for him. We said that he had limited recent experience of Finland, and he was up there setting the times. But as we've already just said, I think it was obvious what was going to happen on day two with Oit Tanak, because yes, it was incredibly close on day one, but Tanak had had the worst of the road position. I think as soon as day two came, Tanak had a more favourable position. It was obvious he was going to be very, very difficult to beat. But as Trev's already said, you know, the pace was so fast in Finland, you can't drive at 85%, 90%, because suddenly you'll be dropping sort of whatever, 10, 15 seconds a stage. It's a very different rally in that respect, I guess, to some of the other rallies where you can maybe drive with a bit more of a margin there. You know, you've got to be on it because of the jumps and the corners and the high-speed nature of it. You've really got to be concentrated and to be going for it. So it is probably a hard rally to drive at, you know, like we said, at 85, 90%. But you'd have to think there will be... you know, Tommy will be having a word with Chris and saying, right, we need some solid results from you.
Right. So just I want to push that a little bit more, if you don't mind. So it was clear Tommy was he didn't want to point the finger too much because he understands the situation. He understands in Finland what can happen, can't happen. So if you were Chris Meek and you understood the strategy before the event was not to race Tanak, you had to go out and you'd still to go at a pace where you want to get on the podium and get as many manufacturers' points as possible. What does that actually mean from a driver's point of view? What can you do to slow it down a little bit, but not massively? So that's the thing that I think a lot of people can't get their heads around, or certainly a lot of people don't understand what needs to happen in Finland and what you need to do at the front of any rally nowadays if you want to be on the pace. So what is that little bit of coming back? What's that little bit less risk look like if you're driving Finland rally?
And that's the problem. I think Finland is one of those rallies where a little bit less is a huge chunk less, because the speeds are so high, the commitment's so high. You know, on other rallies, you could maybe isolate the really tricky corners, the high speed corners where it's just tightening a little bit, or something over a crest, or there's maybe, certainly on a twisty rally, there's probably corners where you can take less chances, you're not cutting quite so much, but Finland, the speeds are so high that you know, you do have to take the correct line. If you're going a little bit slower, it will be a lot slower, and I think that's the problem for Finland. Difficult to draw that line.
If I can just come in, is this where obviously back in the day splits were so important because pace could be controlled so much easier, where now without splits, obviously you're almost committed.
I don't think, honestly, I think it was that close. When you've got cars separated by tenths of a second, you know, you can't back off by a tenth of a second per stage. You can't back off by 1 second per stage. You can probably back off by 10 seconds per stage, but if you're backing off by 10 seconds a stage, then you're just going to get swamped by the opposition. So, you know, I do think that that is one rally where it's very, very difficult to drive at 80 or 90%.
Trev, I suppose the same point I've just made to you really is that, you know, obviously in car management during a rally was massively controlled by splits, and obviously information being fed into the car during the rally. That's not happening now, is it? So as Ryan just said, you have to kind of play it by ear and get to the end of the stage and see where you're at pace wise. And of course, you can have, you know, to use the term of I suppose a Jari Matti term, which you can have the feeling on one stage, but you might not have that feeling on another and naturally drop time anyway.
Yeah, I think certainly if you're into the second, third day of a rally, in the old days when you had Sebastian Loeb versus the rest of the field, he could control it, of course, by driving to the splits, and he was brilliant at that. But going back to what Ryan says, over the last 3-4 years in particular, where you got those three guys regularly battling it out the front, you got Neuville, Tanak, and Ogier. And then anybody else who's in with a shout, such as Meek and people like that, who are in with a shout of setting fastest times, when they're going at it like that, hammer and tongs, if you think through it logically, if it's the 10K stage, And you're talking about splits of, well, say it sets a 10K section. And there's what a 10 core, let's call it 10 corners in 10K. So a tenth of a second per, you know, per K. And then you're going to try and decide that down to 100. It's just impossible to gauge that. So the only, the reason I was asking the question, or for Ryan in particular, thinking to Chris's mistake on the last day on the Sunday where he took a cut, which a lot of people were saying that he shouldn't have taken that cut. Is that the sort of chance, Ryan, or the sort of thing that he shouldn't be doing? Is that something that, you know, you need to get into your head, right? If I'm driving to get the finish, from Chris's point of view, and I heard him quoted a couple of times as saying, all we've got left is the power stage. So why is he trying to take points off everybody else in the power stage? Because that's not going to do his teammate any good, I don't think. And for Chris, who's land fifth or sixth in the championship, to have an extra two or three points on the power stage, he's just going out there to show that he's fast. And there's no point in showing that you're fast in the last stage of the rally. That's the bit I don't understand, is why was he shaving his tires to go and blitz it in the power stage when it isn't really going to have any effect for the team? It's complete opposite of what the team wants.
I think you're right in what you're saying. There's a difference between what happened on Saturday and between what happened on Saturday and what happened on Sunday. Because what happened on Saturday is something, you know, when you're pushing for a result, you were still pushing for a podium, arguably still pushing for a win at that point, rightly or wrongly. So that's one thing. To then clip something on the Sunday, you're right, yeah, if you're just cruising through the stages on Sunday, we'll come to the power stage in a minute, but if you're cruising through, yeah, you don't cut as much, you don't jump quite as high, you look after the car a little bit more. So, I don't know if that was a personal error on Sunday. Again, I guess that was maybe the first time he'd been through there on new notes. I'm not sure, but you're right. You probably shouldn't have clipped that on a Sunday. You probably shouldn't have been in there. I guess, again, the team would have had a strategy for the power stage, so he would have been definitely driving to that strategy on the Sunday by then. So maybe they were looking for him to take points off the opposition, even if he beat Oit. I guess he's also beating Oit's opposition. So, they'd have made a call on that, and I'm sure he would have been following the team decision on Sunday. But I do think there's a difference in the driving between Saturday and Sunday, definitely.
Folks, just stay with us. We're going to have a little break, and I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more about Rally Finland.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. Talking about winners, losers, and everything else, just picking up Trevor, did you want to add any more to what Rye was just saying there about Chris?
No, I think we've done it. It goes back to the same thing with Chris, you know. It's this concentration thing, and we've talked about it plenty of times. So, and to be a team player the rest of this year, he needs to focus on that. But I don't need to tell anybody that.
No, absolutely not. The other driver I wanted to mention, it was mentioned kind of during dispatches there, while we were kind of debating what happened in the top three, of course, was Lappy. Boy, did he need the result. Boy, did he perform. And boy, did he look like the driver that I seem to remember breaking through in that limited program, right, in Toyota a couple of years back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's clear that the car hasn't been giving him the confidence throughout the year. Or if it has, it's been intermittent. You know, we've seen quite good stages from him. We just haven't seen good rallies from him. But on the much faster stages, it just clearly gave him the confidence he needs as a driver to perform. And like he said, he just looked like the driver that we saw from the first year in Toyota, because let's not forget his second year, the final year, if you like, at Toyota again, he was often found scratching his head, as we've seen this year. So a great confidence boost for him, a fantastic result. Can he carry that forward? Who knows? I guess some of that will depend on, you know, have they actually genuinely moved the car forward? Have they been able to develop it more to Esa-Pekka's liking, or was it just the fact that it suited him in Finland? I guess, you know, we'll see that through the course of the next two or three rallies.
Trevi has been obviously strong in Finland before. Unfortunately, or whatever way you look at it, obviously our next event is back onto tarmac. So any confidence, I guess, he gained from the high-speed gravel stage, is he going to be able to carry anything through from Germany? Will the feel-good factor, do you think, is there something that he can get from that?
Well, they certainly changed the front end of the car before Finland, and that seems to have gone down quite well. It was brilliant to see a happy Lappi as opposed to a yappy Lappi at the end of the stages, because in the past he has, you know, you get to the end of the stage and there's doom and gloom, a bit like sooner than I expect in that respect. So to see him bubbling and absolutely enjoying the event and driving the car was great. Going into Germany, he's a good tarmac driver, don't forget. Certainly anybody comes across and wins the Circuit of Ireland first time out, being a Finnish driver as well, his background is go-karts. So he'll go well, but whether the changes to the front end of the car are going to help it as much in tarmac as it clearly has in fast gravel is yet to be seen. But performance-wise, absolutely brilliant to see it. He's just a brilliant guy. He just brings so much to the World Championship, and it's great to see that he has had a confidence booster.
Right. The other thing, of course, about Citroën, of course, is that was their final joker, the changes they made on the front of the car. I don't know where the other teams are up to with their jokers right now. I suppose, from the point of view, it's three jokers that are allowed, isn't it, throughout the season?
And Hyundai made some changes as well, didn't they, at the front end. It seems, you know, that, well, aero is obviously, it's the key development area nowadays. We've never seen aero like this since, I guess, arguably the Group B days. But, you know, obviously the aero's significantly more sophisticated now than it was then. And that's the area of development. It's crucial to get in a good balance. It's crucial to maintain in that balance. And you know, I guess they're just looking for more and more downforce. Toyota have seemed to have the measure of this, you know, all along. That seems to be going very well for them. And it's something we've touched on before. You know, Toyota have fantastic facilities. They have an amazing wind tunnel in Germany that Ferrari were using until not so long ago with the F1 team. So they do have some incredible resources. And, you know, it does seem that maybe the other teams have taken a little bit of time to catch up in terms of aero.
We're hearing mixed reports, boys, with regards to just, obviously, we touched upon it last week, the unfortunate incident, obviously, that prevented Hayden Padentrev from starting Rally Finland. Various sources are coming out now to say that there's a very, very strong chance he could well now be doing Germany for M Sport and maybe something else beyond. Again, I haven't really looked too much at Hayden's tarmac experience. I know he was trying to get additional tarmac experience during that year. He had that limited program with Hyundai. Of course, he was doing some additional events in an R5 car on tarmac as well, I think, when Seb was still alongside him. But great if this story is going to be confirmed, you know, very, very shortly. Hopefully this week it'll be confirmed. But outside of that, is it an event that, you know, you want to come into, you know, an unforgiving tarmac rally such as Germany?
It's not his chosen, so it's not his favourite surface. Definitely, that's a big thing, and it depends on the nature of the deal, how much the contribution from New Zealand has to be for it. Because if I was managing him, I wouldn't be putting him out if there's one or two rally option going forward, and tarmac wouldn't be the one I'd choose for Hayden. Even though I remember back to the last campaign that he had last year, whatever, he was strong in one or two tarmac rallies. I remember that. So, and he has a TCR car now, so he has a touring car effectively at home that he's using. So that could be strong. What would have been fascinating just to see Hayden in Finland, to see where he would have mixed it. So what would have been their target for Finland? I imagine he's somewhere in the top five. How would he have got on with that, considering that the other drivers couldn't really get on with the car? Certainly Sunnen was very critical of the setup and not being able to drive it. So how would Hayden have done anything differently? Would he have been able to mix it more with the best of the rest? And that would have been really interesting for me just to see how that would have panned out.
Yeah, you know, I think, and you know, I started this podcast by talking about winners and losers. Obviously, Hayden was a massive loser in terms of not starting Rally Finland right, but you know, the attitude towards his backers, and certainly what we're hearing from M Sport as well, you know, it might actually turn into a few more rallies for him. You know, there could be some good from this bad, as it were.
Well, hopefully for him. You know, we've said it before, we'd love to see him back in the World Championship. He's an asset to the championship. He's not only a great driver, he's a great personality around the rally. So he would be great to see, and he's an experienced guy as well, you know, so it's another experienced man in M Sport that can hopefully help, you know, move that car forward. We know that the team's capable. We know that the car's capable. That we've seen it in the recent past, and you know, we want to see them competing at the sharp end. They did earlier in the year with Elvin. So, you know, anything that can help develop that car, help keep moving the team forward is good. And Hayden is an asset to the championship, but like Trevor said, whether if he comes back in Germany, whether he can put in a, you know, a strong performance on tarmac, that'll be a test for him for sure.
I think so. But just going back to Finland boys, as I say, I wanted to touch upon that because of this the kind of theme of the podcast, I suppose, is winners and losers. Can we? Is this? I don't know whether this is lazy, Trevor. Can we look beyond Oitanak now
for the championship?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think even the mighty Serbogia, it'll be a Houdini act, I think, this year with six rallies to go. You remember this time last year, it was the first of three rallies in a row that Tanak won. I think he won Germany and Turkey. So it's his to lose now, and I think certainly if the other two guys can help him out, then they're certainly going to be stronger, I think, in the rest of the rallies and the teammates and the other with Neuville and with Ozier. So yeah, I think it's nailed on for Tanak to win it this year, providing again that the car is strong, because that's the thing that's let him down on a few occasions.
Right. The reason why I'm asking you, because while I was getting Trev's response there, I was looking at our predictions, which we didn't actually broadcast last week, but was in our little group. Your confidence towards Oitanak becoming our 2019 World Rally Champion?
Yeah, absolutely. As Trev's just said, I think it is in his own hands. I think from a driving point of view, he will be world champion. The only thing that can stand in his way is any unreliability, because, you know, he's got such pace, and he's even getting to the point now where he doesn't need to win every rally, because there will be rallies where he'll win. And there'll be rallies where he can just pick up a second or a third, and that'll be more than enough. So, unless, you know, and obviously we've seen it earlier in the year, unless he has unreliability, it's definitely his. He controlled that rally from start to finish. I know, like we said, it was close on the first day, but from Saturday morning, he was in a league of his own. We saw it in Sony a few weeks ago. We keep seeing it repeatedly on World Championship rallies. And the car is clearly fantastic. He's gelling with the car. He's gelling with the team. And, you know, both Ogier and Neville are up against it now. Hyundai still leading the Manufacturers' Championship. So with their plethora of drivers, you know, we'll have to see what they do going forward with drivers, because we'll see. I mean, they're still, Neville has a good chance of the championship still. So does Ogier, but, it, you know, it's only a chance. And Germany will certainly give us a good direction as to where we think that championship's going to go. But, you know, it could be that Hyundai will start favouring that manufacturer's championship.
Before we go on.
Toyota as well, and Tanak, remember in Sardinia, they were on track to definitely add 25 and probably 30 points. So he could have been actually 52 ahead at this point.
Wow. Before we come to Hyundai's plethora of drivers, I'm just going to quickly go through predictions from last week. Trevor Agnew, it was Tanak, Ogier and Sunnanen. Ryan Champion was Tanak, Jari Matti Latvala and Gary Neville, who'd have thought a former England right back would have been on the pace. I'm assuming
he wasn't, so
I'm assuming that was a typo. Well, we know it was a typo.
No, it was fully intentional.
Was it? Okay. Gary Neville.
It was fully intentional because did you not see the others that followed? If you did.
Yeah, I've got them up in front of me.
I did actually call Neville, Thierry, Henri on air a couple of times when I was working for WRC Live, yeah.
Oh, there you go. There you go. I can see the similarities. And I went with Tanak, Terry Butcher, and Yari Matti Latvala. So there you go.
Well, okay, you were closest then.
Yeah, that's showing off. I had one and three, right?
I knew all of that, but I chose not to bring it up.
Yeah, I bet you did. listen, we've just been talking, of course, about the irony is we've just been talking about Hayden's possible more opportunities with M Sport Boys. But, right, we also heard some positive things with regards to maybe Craig having some further outings with Hyundai.
Well, he did everything, like we said at the start, he did everything that could have been asked of him. His pace on the first day, fantastic. Yes, it was difficult for him to maybe keep that pace up on the Saturday, given his experience in the car. And but he was still in touch. You know, he was still fighting with the fastest of his teammates, and he was still fighting with Sebastian Ogier. So he was still doing an amazing job. And then obviously he could help his team leader. So, you know, I think quite rightly that Hyundai should look at using him again because he did a fantastic job.
Trev, we had Paul Nagel on last week, and Rye posed this question to Paul Nagel. It's again, we've spoke about it quite a lot, seeing what Craig's done throughout this year, but very much found himself integrated nicely into that Hyundai i20 Coupe World Rally car, and also very much in the team as well. There's some nice images of him around the team, and he's a very likable character anyway, and he almost seems like he's fitted in seamlessly into Hyundai from some of the social media output and some of the videos that were put out, some of the pictures of and him and the boss and everything else. It all looked very good. The boss even had one of his flat caps on.
Yeah, Craig is that person, and everything that you see in the telly, you see in real life with him. And Paul's the same, so the two of them, and all the supporters and the family and everybody who've been with him would have brought a lovely atmosphere into that team. And yeah, that's a given that would happen anyway. The fact is, performance and everything that was asked him was there as well. He was within a tenth of the fastest time as well on his first day and the first proper day in the car. So, yeah. So my any other business is going to be fantasy team manager for Hyundai for the rest of the year. I can do it now. Or I can leave it to later if you want.
No, let's do it now.
They've announced for Germany now, I haven't already. So it's going to be Neville, it's going to be Mickelson, it's going to be Sordo in Germany. We know that. So Rally Turkey, who would your top three be then? So Neville, clearly, is a given for all of them. Who would support Neville in Turkey?
Rye.
Thanks.
Nice swerve.
Yeah. I was putting Ryan Champion up for it, you see. You didn't realise it was a compliment.
I think Mickelson should have got some confidence from that. We saw it once before this season and then it ebbed away again. But hopefully, you know, the changes to the car that they're making, and Andreas said that the team have been working hard to make him more comfortable in the car with the way he drives it. So, I think I would probably stick with Mickelson. You see, we can't be biased to British drivers if I'm biased towards Craig Breen, can we? So I'm going to put Craig Breen in it.
Oh. Okay. So who will leave out then? So it's Mickelson and Breen in Turkey, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense to me. I don't think Sordo or Loeb want to do that rally, so that would work perfectly. GB is probably the same. I don't think Loeb or Sordo want to do that one. They're never competitive. Well, Sordo is never usually competitive in GB. So, Tony, well, GB, you know the rally well. Who would you put in GB?
I put Andreas. Obviously, we're saying Thierry's a given, so I would put Andreas. Mm-hmm. And I would put... I put Craig again. It seems really lazy and really biased,
Yeah. But
all the all things considered with the other two and what they want to do, do they really want to do GB? Probably
no,
not.
No, I think they've already said they don't
want to. Yeah, it's just an easy one. Right, Catalonia and Australia, the last two then. So Catalonia, Rye?
Well, Catalonia, you've got to go Sordo. And to be honest, I go Sordo and Loeb.
Lazy, but I'm going to go with Rye. Same. Yeah,
makes a lot of sense. Australia then is the interesting one for me, last rally.
Andreas, without a shadow of a doubt.
He's won the rally a couple of years back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would probably go for experience.
Hayden Padden.
Yeah. If only for Hayden, eh? If only, mate. For experience and doing the rally before, I would be trying to persuade Sebastian Loeb to do it.
Yeah, and I wouldn't argue with that. And let's see what Loeb does. You never know. It might even be his last World Championship rally.
Yeah, and he might want a whole day in Sydney afterwards.
Absolutely. Folks, we are going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with some any other business, and we might even have Jack banging.
Stop the press.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid-lift crest, 8 to right, minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens by 6 on left crest, over 17, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. In a bizarre twist, someone must have been listening to this as we were recording it, and they decided to finally join us. Jack Banion, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
We're all right. We've recorded, obviously, the first part of this podcast, and there's little things at the beginning of the podcast, especially for you, to test, see whether you were listening. Now,
okay.
So that's going to be weird now, because it's not really going to make any sense. But, hey, it's fun. So we're going to leave that in. Listen, before we move on to our any other businesses, right, we've just been playing, prior to you joining us, our fantasy high-end eye manager for the rest of the season.
All right.
So, Trevor Agnew, please pose the same questions to Jack Banion now.
So we have... Hello, Jack. How are you?
Hi, Trev. How are you doing?
So we have five rallies left. So Deutschland, clearly Neuville's going to be in for all of them. So his teammates have been announced. There's going to be Mikkelsen, and it's going to be Sordo for that one. So Turkey, who would you have supporting Mr. Neuville?
Oh, Breen, definitely. If Craig's proven anything in his WRC career so far, it's that he's very consistent. Not always the quickest driver in the WRC, but he's capable of bringing a car home. And given the conditions in Turkey, as we saw last year, it was absolutely almost impossible to reach the finish for some drivers. And I think pretty much everyone over the course of the rally had problems. And obviously, Oit Tanak was the person who had the least number of problems, but was also the quickest. But I think Turkey is very different to a lot of the other WRC rounds in the sense that it's about marrying consistency and just staying safe, keeping the car in the middle of the road and looking after it. So for me, Craig Breen would be the perfect person to put in the car for Turkey.
Fantastic. See, he still knows a bit about rallying. Yeah. What about GB then?
GB is a tough one. If you've asked me before Finland, I probably said Mikkelsen, but given Rally Finland, I think Craig Breen looked like the quicker driver in Finland than Mikkelsen, and if Craig can do that in his first rally in the car, it'd be great to see what he could do after a couple of rallies in the car. So to be honest, I think I'd have to go Craig Breen again.
You can have both of them.
Okay.
You've got three seats available, Jack.
So we've got Sordo and Loeb to pick from as well, you say?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Does it depend on whether Sordo and Loeb can be bothered?
Sordo, yeah, I don't think they want to do it. So, I think we'll go with that one. The interesting one, Catalonia is going to be Sordo. And who would you have as a third one in Catalonia then?
Oh, if I could persuade Loeb, it would definitely be Loeb on the tarmac. And,
You're matched with us. You're matched with us. And the final one is Australia. That's the interesting one for me.
I think I'd probably go Breen for Australia as well, because he was really well again. And last year was another attrition-filled rally, difficult conditions, saw a lot of rain, got a title battle that Thierry Neuville will need help with. So yeah, I'll go Craig Breen for that one as well.
So Mickelson and Breen, if you could convince Loeb to go to Australia, would you pick him?
Yeah, if I could convince Loeb, I'd have him doing all of them. But I think the likelihood of convincing Sebastian Loeb to do most of those rallies would be quite difficult. I think Spain will be motivated to do. But the rest of them, I think he'd probably want to give him this.
Okay, there you go. Very nicely well done, Trev. It's almost like you've done this stuff before. Jack Benyon, welcome back. I know you've obviously just come straight from a meeting, a very important meeting. Have you got any other business for this week?
Have I gotten any other business? Yeah, all right, I haven't any other business.
Go on then.
Might be a bit of a cop-out though.
Go on then.
This is a fantastic feature by David Evans that's going to run on Autosport in the next couple of days, which just before my meeting, I just finished subbing, ready to go online, I think tomorrow. So that'll be Wednesday for listening to the podcast. So hopefully if you check on Wednesday, it should be up. But it's basically poses the question... Well, not really a question, but kind of looking at the second half of the WRC season and kind of stating that it's going to be really difficult for Toyota and that their sort of defence of the Manufacturers' Championship faces a turning point here in Finland, where if Meek and Latvala did indeed kind of succumb to the temptation of having to go at Oytanak and trying to match his pace, David Evans basically argues that that's going to make Toyota's title defence in the Manufacturers' Championship very difficult for the second half of the season, and that Toyota now need to really pull rank, make Oytanak that number one driver and really set him ahead of the rest and force Jari Mäkelä and Chris Meek to support him. And that's the best way for them to keep their seats for next year, because obviously there's talk about Cali Rovanperä already being in the lineup for next year, and potentially, you know, there may be only one seat there between Jari Matti and Chris Meek, and both of those were apparently rumoured that they might not be back next year, so there could be two new drivers in the Toyota setup. So the second half of the season, David basically argues that Jari Matti and Chris need to support the Toyota manufacturer's effort. So that's a very good feature, and you should definitely try and read it on Wednesday if you can.
Well done, Jack. That's almost feel like we just brought you in to do an advert. Ryan Champion.
Or a recap of what we discussed in the
Ryan Champion.
Well, we have broached this subject before, and I mentioned it on Twitter over the last couple of days, which created a huge debate, and that's of man-made jumps. Here's a question then to the three of you. The last jump on Rui Mäki, the big man-made jump, is there a place for that in rallying or not?
No. No.
From a driver's point of view, no.
Jack Benyon?
I'll say yes, just to be awkward. Do you want me to explain why?
Yes.
Well, I think I've seen more videos of that Ogier jump than probably any other rally video for the past, I don't know how long, probably this season, in the space of 2 or 3 days, which at a time where you're trying to open the WRC up to, more general fans and stuff like that, I think anything that inspires pictures like that is incredible, providing it's safe and that they can prove it.
I fully agree with that. Is it safe? Because that was very, very close to going wrong. And if he barrel rolled down the road, it would have been shared even more times than what it was.
Yeah.
Where would the car have ended up? Where would the parts have ended up?
Well, that's what I was just about to specify at the end, is that as long as the championship and the drivers accept that, you know, it is a safe jump to make, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? You know, you could argue that, the driver's pushing too hard in sort of 70 miles an hour corners, if they pushed it a little bit too hard, then they can make silly mistakes and have big crashes. And it's the same for the jump. If you take the jump too aggressively, you know, you can have a big accident there. So to be honest, Ryan, I kind of agree in the sense that it's a massive jump and it looks pretty scary in terms of what could happen if it went wrong. But you know, if the championship and the drivers and the event think it's safe, then I think it's quite a difficult one.
Just my take on that, why I brought it up. I mean, I think it's borderline, because the cars are flat out up to it. They're going as fast as they'll go. It's over the flying finish on the power stage, so nobody's going to lift. Everybody's going to take it as fast as it'll go. And as you can see, you know, as the cars are getting to 50, 60 metres, the aero's just doing things that it isn't designed to do. And, I just think by having... Yeah, and I'm all for a spectacular WRC. I must put that in there first. But we've got spectacular stages in Finland anyway. We're risking an accident. You know, for steering arm brakes on landing, there was an awful lot of people around there. And I just think it's great to have these things, but we just need a little bit of common sense in there.
Sounds like a Twitter poll to me, Tony.
It does sound like a Twitter poll. Where have you come from, Jack? You've only been here 6 minutes and you're laying down the smacketh down.
Well, this is why you have me here. You need the Benjamin Law laid down, don't you?
Clearly we do.
You've changed.
Yeah, you've changed.
I remember, I've got Hollywood now.
You have. Do you know what? Right, we talked about you at the beginning of this podcast. Right, you need to listen.
I can't wait to hear that.
You need to listen.
Was it somebody along the lines of, oh, he used to be such a nice guy, and now he's just gone all Hollywood, and he thinks he can rock up whenever he likes and have meetings whenever he wants to do that?
No, it wasn't.
Turn up for Absolute Rally anymore.
It was none of that. It was about how much we've done for your career.
Yeah. So get back in your bunker.
Yeah.
Well, you've made my career now. I don't need any of you anymore.
Yeah, there you go. We feel cheap and used. Trevor Agnew, you're any other business?
My any other business then on the subject of jumps and things like that, and Ryan was talking about it there. Aero on World Rally Cars. Does it work or does it not work? How much does it work and how vital is it? So, on day one, Sunan lost the splitter in the front of his Focus Fiesta, and he reckons that was one of the reasons why he wasn't going as fast. Fast forward to the next day when Yari Matti gets his puncture and takes the whole of the corner off the car, and in the next stage he sets fastest time. So I'm no expert on it. I have spoke to some experts about it in the past, and their thinking is, or what they're saying to me is, when the car sits high on a gravel suspension, the aero, the way it would work in a Formula 1 car, a race car, it doesn't have the same effect. So it just seems strange to me. There's a couple of occasions where drivers have got to the end of the stage and not noticed half the aero has gone off the car and they've gone fastest. We've seen that a few times. So is it worth all the money it costs to put it on there and keep it on there? If you think back to Turkey last year and the amount of money it was bandied about that Toyota were spending or spent on that event to replace aero parts.
I'd like to just, you know, Rye, do you remember we spoke to Yari Matti about this?
Yeah, and Craig earlier in the year, actually.
Yeah, and it kind of came down to attitude as well, didn't it? I think, well, certainly Yari's response was an attitude of the driver as well.
Well, a confidence thing.
Yeah, I think so.
If the driver knows it's on there, he's got more confidence, therefore he drives faster. Is that?
No,
that clearly is what Sunan, I think, was his issue on Friday. And you could sort of see the body language of Rich Milner and Malcolm Wilson saying, really? You think that's the reason why you're not as fast as you should be?
I didn't see that, so I'm not going to comment on that as such. But I know from when, obviously, we did the thing with Yari Matti and we were talking about the aero and the big, you know, was it a specific event quite similar to what's just happened in Finland where we picked Yari up on it and said, well, you were quick with that one without a corner being on the car practically. And he was very quick to kind of just point out, you know, a lot of it you can kind of drive around and stuff like that. I guess, does it come down to experience?
I think that definitely the cars definitely benefit from aero. They do benefit from the aero. And again, I remember Craig saying clearly earlier in the year, you know, when he went back to the R5 car, one of the most difficult things to get used to again about the R5 car was the lack of downforce at high speed. So, you know, the cars, you can't have great big wings like that and then not be doing anything. They've got to have an effect.
Just to be clear here, I'm not talking about, of course, it's going to be downforce. If you go back to Group A cars, etc., certainly you can notice if the roof spoiler goes or the boot spoiler goes up. I'm talking about the intricacies of it, you know, so all these dive pins and all these other things that I don't think the intricacies of it make that big a difference.
I think some of it is, you know, if you lose the rear wing, obviously you're going to notice that significantly. But also, I think that's the problem. And the same when the cars go airborne, if they do lose the front splitter, they've got nothing to offset that massive rear wing at the back. You know, and I think we saw that with Ogier's car going airborne, it such downforce from the back and it suddenly started getting a lift at the front. So I think if they don't have that balance there, that's when it's creating issues.
If only we had somebody with a Group A car that we could talk to about this.
With no aero whatsoever.
Jack, any ideas?
It's difficult. I'm kind of 50-50 on this because I love the look of the cars. I think they look fantastic. And I think you'll have friends on social media who, you know, have gone to rallies for the first time to see, as in, you know, for the first time to see 2017 cars, and have just been blown away by the, you know, how great they look and the intricacy of the aero on them. You know, he's encourages so much pictures to come from the service park, and people are just blown away when they see them, which is fantastic. But also on the other side of the coin, I just don't think it's necessary. I think, you know, I think we've talked about this before, and I think if R5 was the top level in WRC, or, you know, like a bit of a modified version of R5, then for me that would be fine, and I wouldn't have any problem with that. So it's very, very expensive. But do we hear the teams complaining all the time about how much they spend on bodywork? Not really. It's not something that they talk about. It seems to talk about every single event or anything like that. So
there is a few mentions of how much Toyota spend, I think.
Yeah, but I don't think that's Toyota.
No, it's not Toyota.
None of the
other teams sometimes mention what Toyota are spending on aero, I think.
Yeah, I think they throw it around, but you're always going to get that with big manufacturers, aren't they, when they know another manufacturer is spending a lot more money. But it doesn't seem like an issue that they sort of bring up continuously all the time, that it seems to be a massive issue. So, yeah, it's a difficult one. Like I said, I think we'd be fine without the aero, to be honest, and I think it'd save a lot of money, which I think would be great, but at the same time, the spectacle that the aero helps to produce is phenomenal.
Okay, my Any Other Business takes us back way back beyond aero. It was a video that I spotted the other day, and I completely and utterly forgot. It was Roger Clark and Colin McRae's birthday the other day. Colin would have been 51, and there was a video of them trying each other's cars out, and one of them was the Legacy, I think. Rye, I think you did you share this? I don't know whether you shared it.
I did see it, but I didn't share it. No.
And it just took me back to the halcyon days, and maybe it is rosy-coloured spectacles. But where I was going, and it's quite funny, really, leaning on a little bit what Jack's just been saying about the aero and where Trev was going and everything else, is that maybe it's an age thing, and I said it tongue-in-cheek, right? And I'm not just saying it because, obviously, what you've got and everything else. But I still love Group A, and I still don't know why we need all those things. And I still believe
the footage from the 1991 event, was it 1990 event that was on WRC Plus was fantastic, because the cars had so little grip, they had so little suspension travel, and still about the same power as they have now. You know, because that was 40 mil restrictors in those days. So big restrictors, very little grip, no suspension, and they were spectacular.
There you go. Folks, that is the end of this week's podcast. I hope you've managed to put up with it. We finally got Jack back on a podcast. First one of this season. Well done, Jack Bennion.
Thank you. Sorry for missing
that. A little round of applause for Jack Bennion. Well done.
Don't make me feel bad now. Come on.
There you go. Jack Bennion, you're not getting out of it. You're with us next week. We'll have a proper catch up with you next week.
And not only that, Jack, we've had celebs for you to come on, because we know you like celebs now, but we've had celebs on and you still haven't turned up.
I'm really sorry. I'm genuinely sorry, but hopefully I'll make up for it by bringing you some live stuff from Rally Germany.
Okay, all right. Well, there you go. No pressure, no pressure. Folks, that has been this week's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please share it around. If you want to get involved with the debate, you know, to get in contact, the studio at absoluterally.co.uk. Of course, you can send us a message on Facebook, facebook.com/absoluterally, Twitter, @absolute_rally. We'll be back same time, same place in the podcast hall next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.